How do you scale a business to 7 figures? Then how do you scale to 8 figures? Then how do you scale to 9 figures? If you've ever wanted to know what it takes to grow a business, then you're in the right place. Thanks for tuning in to Scaling with Samir. This show is intended to celebrate and highlight techniques and strategies taught by today's leaders in the business world. Want to know how an e-commerce business started in someone's home to being the world's largest sock store? Want to learn what it takes to become the CEO of one of the largest global online marketplaces? How about actionable steps to building stronger relationships with your customers to produce more revenue? Do you know which numbers you should be paying attention to and which numbers will lead you to success? How will you make your marketing campaigns successful after cookies are gone? Want to learn from the leaders in brand building and attention-grabbing marketing? Well, all of those are already in our previous listed episodes, and this episode will be no exception. I interview the top marketers that are influencing the market, making an impact, scaling faster than their competitors, and doing good for the world. We will dissect what they did to get to the multi-million dollar mark. I'm your host, Samir Al-Kamouni, founder and CEO of Fetch & Funnel, which is a performance marketing agency specializing in scaling businesses. Sign up to receive tactics to apply directly to your business to improve results and scale at fetchfunnel.com/podcast. At the end of each episode, my goal is to have you feeling inspired and fired up by learning from today's top innovators, marketers, and entrepreneurs. Let's dig into another amazing story about a unique business crushing it and learn from their success and learnings. Hey, everybody. Welcome back to an exciting episode. Today, I am really pumped to be featuring not only one of the best cookware brands in the world that are doing innovative things, doing really fun things on the marketing side, operational side, and even maybe call it brand identity side in order to stand out from an extremely crowded market. But we're talking with the SVP of operations who has been with the business almost from the beginning. And so he's going to have a ton of awesome value to be sharing. And I'm really excited to chat with him. Chad Brinton, welcome to the podcast.
Thanks, Samir. Very kind introduction. I appreciate that. And thanks for having me.
I would love for you to kick things off and tell us a little about Made In.
Yeah, Made In. We started off as a direct-to-consumer cookware, really focusing on, you know, kind of the stainless steel pots and pans as our sort of hero product. But as is the case with many direct-to-consumer brands, you know, we've really iterated on the sales channel approach since that initial launch. And, today we sell into restaurants, hotel chains, hospitality groups through a direct sales team, as well as through brick and mortar retailers as well. And hope to take, you know, the good momentum we've built here in the United States and take that international. For customers who may be listening in Canada or Europe, you know, we'll hope to see you soon.
Love it. And Chad just had a brand new baby, so congratulations on that. So if we hear him chiming in a little bit, we've asked him to also join the podcast here because I think he's also got some valuable information while he's. Yeah, love it. He's gonna be, you know, doing his own thing by the age of 10. Who knows? Would love for you to kind of touch maybe upon a couple of, before we hit record here, we were talking about just how much of a crowded landscape is and how, right, there's brands that are 100 years old and who knows how long, right? And so how did you kind of get Made In established, and, you know, what were maybe some of the things that have helped you differentiate in the market and be so successful?
Yeah, I mean, I think ultimately, you know, I'm happy to divulge this because I think we did the hard thing, and it, you know, we kind of took the road less traveled, and it's the one that's hard to copy, right? You know, in that we took the time to really understand the full supply chain and find, you know, craftsmen using premium materials in premium locations that are not traditionally the manufacturing centers that you see kind of product companies going to when, you know, you're trying to get something made and bring it to the mass market. And so, you know, the kind of competitive moat that we've been able to sort of dig for ourselves and maintain is, you know, we sell a product that you would find used in a professional kitchen. And in fact, it is used in a professional kitchen. And it's almost this aspirational product for so many at-home chefs who, you know, especially during the pandemic and afterwards, gravitated towards cooking as this new form of you know, self-expression almost, or this hobby. And we're, you know, seeing ourselves as giving them the premium tools that they need to kind of develop this craft, because that's what our restaurant customers and chefs are doing on a nightly basis.
I love that. And I know, you know, we were talking about this a little bit before we hit record, just as far as like you know, chefs are actually your clients, right? You not only do you have the direct to consumer standpoint, right, where you're selling directly to, you know, us kind of normal people, if you will, the whole, you know, wish to be chefs, but you actually sell to chefs, to restaurants, to, and on a B2B standpoint. And so, you know, how has that positively impacted the business, you know, and maybe even from an operational standpoint, because I know you were saying, you know, it's one of the best feedback mechanisms you've received.
Yeah. I mean, I think first and foremost, it is that feedback mechanism, right? Like it is, you know, testing your product at scale that the at-home chef will probably never reach. You know, I like to think I cook quite a bit and I probably cook dinner, you know, 4 or 5 nights a week. But when you're talking to a restaurant, you know, they're cooking a couple hundred meals a night on a pan and, you know, leaving products on a, you know, 800 degree flame for, you know, multiple hours. Right. And so it is really an ability to get fast feedback that we can bake into future generations of the product and ensure that, you know, for the at-home chef, you know, they're not going to see any issues when they're, you know, cooking 5 meals a night. I think the second piece of that is, you know, we kind of, you know, the food space and the food industry is so aspirational and just so, you know, there have been so many Netflix documentaries on brisket and tacos and just so many things. And it is an area where the at-home chef seems to have these like celebrity-like, you know, followings for, you know, these chefs out there, these Grant Achatts, these Tom Colicchios, these Brooke Williamsons. And, you know, for us to say that those folks are customers and users of our product is really just kind of like this flywheel effect that we describe on our marketing channels to say, you know, if you're a fan of these restaurants or you're a fan of these chefs, you know, you can actually use the cookware that they use in their restaurants at home to make dinner tonight. Right.
Yeah, no, absolutely. And I'm sure COVID helped because all of us tried to become professional chefs kind of, and I can't imagine how many people were learned to cook during that period of time. And I'm sure things helped. Were you able to continue that momentum alongside that? Or did you find yourself kind of struggling after maybe we went back to office or people kind of started being able to order their takeouts again and everything else?
I lost you there for a second, Samir, but I think I got your question. When we, the pandemic was a huge tailwind to our business. And, you know, while it was such a difficult time for so many people, you know, I think a lot of direct-to-consumer brands and e-commerce brands alike really thrived from a demand perspective during that time, just because of the changing, you know, lifestyles that everyone had. And the food space was just huge. And I don't know if you still have any sourdough starter left over from that time. You know, it's a great example of just, you know, a cooking trend that really took off, but, you know, just cooking in general and the whole industry. I mean, you know, from our manufacturers to our raw material suppliers, everybody really felt the impacts of that. But, you know, on the positive side, you know, demand was plentiful. I think, you know, we saw a lot of, there were certainly a lot of struggles after the pandemic on the manufacturing side and on the operation side. But I think one thing that we've always focused on as a brand is providing customer experiences that lead to retention and making sure that, you know, we're providing what we call hospitality level service, right? Like we almost see ourselves as part of this hospitality industry and, you know, alongside the restaurants and chefs that we serve. And we want our customers to feel that, right? And so we've always had a really high, you know, repeat purchase rate. And so all those people we brought in for the first time because they wanted to try out, you know, a new fry pan to, you know, learn a new cooking technique during the pandemic. We've been pretty successful as keeping those folks in the, you know, ecosystem and bringing them back to the site with new product launches.
I love that. Yeah, that kind of putting that experience first and taking care of your customers obviously can help so much. And then I know you kind of mentioned earlier coupling that with those, right, really high quality materials and sort of going above and beyond and doing it the hard way. You know, I'm curious just because especially your position and where you've been through the brand,
how can other brands leverage sort of that operational excellence to drive growth without stifling innovation?
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, if I were to take a step back and I guess sort of, ask myself, what is my role and value to the company? And I think it's really consistent across any, certainly direct to consumer e-commerce brand, and that, the operations team is tasked with finding a way to say yes to the sales and marketing, ideas that may come, right? Like, how can we say yes to new revenue streams, and how can we make those a possibility of growth while also upholding the customer expectations and the customer promise in tandem with that, right? I think secondarily is, making sure that you can do it from a foundation that scales and that eventually can, be profitable, right? Controlling cost and, knowing where to turn to drive cost out of the business and create some operating leverage. But ultimately, I think those are, kind of the biggest tasks that any operator at a startup is going to be asked to solve. And I think the holy grail in terms of, kind of the customer expectation piece is, how can you be proactive, right? Like, how can we take a future, problem that a customer brings to us and solve it before they ever know that it was a problem, right? And that's easier to do in some cases and harder to do in others. But, there are certainly some simple ways, whether it's, setting up alerts that if an order doesn't ship within 48 hours, like, somebody better have some eyes on it and understand what's going on to make sure that 48 hours doesn't become 72 hours, for example, right?
Yeah. Oh, no, absolutely. Yeah. I like that, right? What you're talking about, kind of prioritizing customer support, before they even know what's going on, being proactive versus reactive, which is very important. I mean, I know that's very hard for businesses that are just starting out, but as you're growing the team, and you have customer base, real customer base, then it just becomes more and more important. And then, I mean, I know, you're also kind of talking about, right, sort of that seamless positive customer experience. I'm curious, are there any levers that you think you've pulled or done successfully that helped with all of that, right? The customer experience standpoint and everything, but actually kind of drove brand loyalty.
I think the area where we have gotten the biggest benefit is when we have reached significant scale such that we can bring process in-house, right? Like, I think back to, we, like many other direct-to-consumer brands, for, the early years of our business, we depended upon, third-party logistics providers to fulfill all of our orders for us. And we were at nowhere near the scale we needed to set up our own fulfillment operation. But once we reached that and we could bring fulfillment in-house, it gave us such a better appreciation of what maybe some of the pitfalls that lead to customer disappointment down the road could be, and inability to set up processes that we then share now with our third-party fulfillment providers as lessons learned of our own, right? Like, we're living it, we're kind of, seeing the process play out. And I think that, if I had to, say any single thing, has probably been the biggest driver of improvement in customer outcomes, is just having more ownership of the process and putting more care and more understanding and more process behind what ultimately becomes, how the customer first interacts with your product.
Yeah. That's really interesting, because I feel like the brands that crush it are the ones that really do pay attention to that stuff. Yeah. And I think when you ignore that, you don't even know that it's having a negative effect necessarily. Mm-hmm. I feel like you almost, either way, right? If you do it really well, sometimes you'll see it, you'll feel it, right? It's and that's when you're getting the customer testimonial videos and not even asking for them. Yeah. But if you're not getting those and you're not getting that customer feedback and experience, I think maybe you should kind of revisit what you're doing or how you're delivering either the product or the service or customer experience, whatever it is, in order to try to facilitate maybe more of that happening just on its own without you having to ask for it.
Totally. I mean, it's kind of built into the name, right? It's direct to consumer. And, that is the advantage that we have and that this whole industry has. Like, the feedback is there. Like, all you have to do is, to your point, listen to it, or, maybe in some cases ask for it. you know, I give the founders a lot of credit. They're, you know, they've always been since day one, you know, guys who had no chip on their shoulder about, you know, jumping in and answering customer support tickets or working in the warehouse or doing whatever needed to happen to get the job done. And, you know, that's kind of permeated our company as a culture. And so, you know, all of us are, you know, reading, you know, actual customer support tickets, you know, all of us are taking the time to really understand the voice that our customers have and what they're telling us. Right. And, you know, again, to your point, like the companies that are best at satisfying their customers are the ones that actually listen to them. So a big believer in that philosophy, and we're certainly not the first to come up with it, but you know, I think we're at least hoping to follow in the footsteps.
Yeah, no, absolutely. Yeah, no, it makes sense. And so I'm especially with the experience that you've had, not only in Maiden, but also with other roles that you've held,
yeah.
You know, I'm curious, what are some of the most maybe common operational challenges that maybe brands or even you have faced during those growth phases? And, you know, any advice on how others can be, you know, proactively addressing those?
Yeah. You know, I kind of joked. So prior to Maiden, I was at Walmart and working on the e-commerce team there. And, you know, in my time there, I, you know, crossed paths with many folks who are, you know, sort of operations leaders at startup organizations now. And I used to joke when I joined Maiden that the role from Walmart to Maiden was not that different, you know, and at the end of the day, like the sort of operational joke of, you know, shipping or manufacturing widgets and is true to a certain extent. And we're all trying to solve the same problem, right? Like we're all trying to grow the business and scale the business and cut cost and make customers happy. And so I think, you know, the things that we learned at Walmart at scale were some of the things that we tried to employ at Maiden, to make, you know, the customers happy on a smaller scale.
So I'm also curious, maybe chatting about, you know, what we're talking about with, right, kind of optimizing operations and ongoing process. And, you know, I know you're close with the founders, you've known them for a long time, but I'm curious sort of as your positions moved up and as you brought more team members on board, how do you promote a culture of sort of continuous improvement within your team? And then maybe what metrics do you use to track progress?
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, I think the best thing, I think there's a few different approaches to being an effective leader. I don't know if any approach is necessarily the right one. I think the approach that I've taken is kind of a lead by example perspective, right? And, you know, I think similar to the comments I made earlier about just the good example that the founders have said about, you know, being willing to roll up their sleeves and do anything if it's the right answer for the business or for the customer, and kind of embodying that same principle and methodology. With my team as well, I am a big metrics person. I am a big KPI person. I think most people these days are. And I think the important thing for us is, you know, we're tracking all the same metrics that, you know, I think any brand would when they're chasing profitability, you know, cost per order, you know, cost per service interaction, those sorts of things. But making sure that we don't oversolve for the cost and forget about the customer, right? So we always couple those metrics with a service metric too. So, you know, maybe it's CSAT on the customer service side, and maybe it's, you know, from click to ship on the fulfillment side, you know, the time from when the order's placed to when we get it out the door, just to ensure that we're keeping a balance there, you know, and we don't become an organization that focuses on one side and forgets about the other.
Yeah, no, it makes a lot of sense. No, that's super helpful. And I love the lead by example. I think that's so important, and unfortunately not done often. It feels like such an obvious thing when you yourself do it, but you know, it's, I've been in so many other positions where it just doesn't happen. And it is such an interesting one. And, you know, and I think it also has its struggles in remote life too, right? It becomes a lot different when we're kind of behind these laptops and you're not seeing each other in an office setting and seeing kind of what somebody's doing, or, you know, what, hearing other conversations, even if you're not a part of them. And so, yeah, I mean, I I appreciate you bringing that up, but I also understand the struggles of, like, it's much easier said than done in a way.
Yeah. I mean, I think, you know, I think good leaders universally are elite at communication, right? And being effective at getting an organization rallied around, you know, these priorities by being effective at, you know, communicating and getting folks to understand the value and what's required to achieve the vision, right? And I think, to your point, in a remote world, that becomes really difficult. And, you know, thanks to Slack and some of these other tools, like, I think we have the pieces, but it requires a new skill set and a new diligence to create that same visibility and communication around it. You know, I worked for a guy at Walmart e-commerce who really left an example on me. His name's Tom Short. He recently took over as the CEO at Vroom, the online car marketplace. And, you know, I watched him for the first 3 months of his time at Walmart, just speaking with everyone. And then that allowed him to just piece together a super clear vision. And he went on this roadshow of just, you know, getting everyone bought into the vision and was unwavering in how he communicated it and just so consistent in his messaging that he got an organization the size of Walmart, you know, really rallying behind this vision. And that was a great example that, you know, I've tried to embody in the extent that I can too.
Yeah, that's awesome. I love that. It's always good to have good mentors and good leaders to pay attention to. And, you know, and maybe even on that note, I'm curious on your end, right? Is for maybe for other operational or even aspiring operation professionals, maybe looking to contribute to brand growth, right? Because I know you've been a pinnacle part of that at Maiden. What key skills or areas of expertise would you recommend them focusing on?
Yeah, and I think, you know, first of all, just having that mentality, right? Like, if you're someone who is asking yourself, like, hey, how can I be, you know, a more effective contributor to this organization, or how can I grow my skill set or grow my career? You're probably already on the right path just by being, you know, the type of person that would ask those questions and have that mentality. And I'd say above, that's probably, you know, to me, the single biggest sign of success. But above and beyond that, like, you know, somebody who is capable with data analytics and is, you know, sort of scrappy on which system to go to get that information to kind of piece together their perspective. You know, I think a lot of startup organizations, the data is there, but it's probably, you know, hidden in some system that is not connected to anything else. And just being able to be scrappy about where to find that thing can give you a lot of power.
Sure. Yeah. No, absolutely. No, and it is, right? Ask the questions, get involved. You're obviously involved in a lot of the cross-team collaboration. And like you mentioned earlier, right? Everybody's reading the tickets. Everybody's kind of having conversations about, you know, what's going well, what's not going well, having that collaboration. I mean, I think it's so crucial to helping with the growth, because then everyone's aware, right? And I think the different perspectives can help as well, right? Someone from customer service can chime in on a fun marketing idea. And if that cross collaboration's not happening, no one would be aware of that idea.
Yeah. Yeah, exactly.
And so, I mean, maybe on a innovation standpoint and kind of looking ahead, I'm really curious, maybe what is there any exciting trends or innovations that you see on the horizon that's going to further impact just like how operations support either brand growth or even just kind of internal processes?
Yeah. And there's so much going on right now. I mean, you name any trend that, you know, is sort of pervasive across all industries and it's impacting, you know, operations, you know, very poignantly, right? Like, AI is going to be huge in our space for our ability to identify issues kind of more proactively and then, you know, even, you know, manage kind of drafting alerts and communications to customers based on those things, right? Like there's no reason why, for example, you know, we can't utilize some of those technologies to identify an order that's going to be delayed and notify a customer more proactively because of those things. I think it's also time, you know, it's good time for a direct-to-consumer operator as well. Like the space is so competitive, whether it's fulfillment or software providers, and there are just so many brands who are trying to innovate and kind of, you know, go to market with a new service or product that is going to make our lives easier. And for that reason, you know, it's maybe a good time to be a buyer or a good time to be a brand. And you know, that hasn't always been the case in the last 5 years with just kind of the macroeconomic trends that have been, you know, sort of dealt to us at times. And so it's, you know, at least for our sake, it's been nice to sort of realize when it's good, you know, when the economy's good or when the market's good and to take advantage of those things. And I certainly think that's the case at this moment.
Yeah, no, I love that. And I'm selfishly now I'm curious because I think you've probably been able to have the kind of dream job, if you will, at Maiden, where you kind of had the knowledge and experience at some of these bigger corporations to then be able to be as nimble as you want at Maiden in a way, right? Because hey, we can go in any direction. We're growing super fast. Let's put certain things in place. But I'm curious, you know, on trying to think of how to word this. And I'd assume at Walmart, it'd probably be the opposite, right? It's going to take a long time to make any big changes. And yeah. There's we got to have board meetings just to decide if we're going to go in a new direction or something like that. Potentially. I don't know if that was actually the case. But, I'm curious, you know, given the size you're at and kind of where you've been the last couple of years, do you think that's given you an opportunity in that sense, like to be kind of nimble and implement some of these things, you know, whether it's thinking about how you're going to implement AI or other features? Do you think it gives you almost like it gives you a one up on kind of the bigger companies just because you can, you know, implement things faster or test things faster?
Yeah. I think said differently, like we have to be nimble and we have to implement things quickly, right? And I think that is the advantage that a startup has to take. And I think it's part of the goodness of being a startup that you try not to lose when you become a mid-market or a larger business, right? And I certainly think that I have a dream job, and I try to be grateful and thankful for that every day. And because I get to do exactly what you alluded to, you know, I get to come to work every day and say what's going to make the biggest impact on our company and our customers. And I, you know, try to be focused and prioritized in going and solving that problem or enabling that new feature, or that new capability. I don't know that I would have gotten that same experience at, you know, some of the bigger organizations. And, you know, I think those bigger organizations were also important to give me the skill set and the experience and the know-how to, you know, sort of arrive at where I've come today. But, it really is a dream experience to be able to sort of carve a path of, you know, where you think you can add the most value today or this week or this month.
Well, I think that's the perfect place to end this. Last question, any book recommendations, either something you've read recently or something that's influenced you the most? And you already seem like an awesome dad. And before we hit record, you told me you've got this amazing son. So even if it's a parenting book, I'm okay with that.
Oh, man. We've been reading to him as we feed him. I don't know that I've really found any that have really resonated with him just yet, but we'll see how he does when he gets a little bit older. I recently read, and I hadn't read it before, the Zappos story about delivering. It's called Delivering Happiness. There's kind of this story in the book, this kind of pivotal moment for Zappos where they were out of funding and couldn't spend any more on growth marketing. And, sort of their solution for that was, well, we can retain the customers that we have. And, you know, they kind of credit that moment for the ethos that they embodied, which was, you know, this brand of customer service and going above and beyond to service the customer, which ultimately we know how this story plays out, you know, and they were acquired by Amazon and were really one of those brands that are credited with getting customers to be comfortable to shop online. And I think it was that experience they provided that was, you know, better than the experience that existed at the time of going to a store and shopping for shoes. I was amazed that I hadn't read that book at, you know, this point in my career, but it was great. And, you know, I always, strangely enough, every time I read a book, I think that there was some cosmic force at play that, you know, caused me to read that at that moment. Like, you needed that message at that time. And I think that was Delivering Happiness for me over these last few weeks.
Love it. Yeah. Amazing book recommendation. I also highly recommend it. One of my favorites. Really appreciate it. Chad, thank you for all the value you shared. Really appreciate it. If anybody wants to connect with you, is there a good place for them to reach out?
Yeah, absolutely. You can find me on LinkedIn. And yeah, all of our email addresses are first name at Made in Cookware. We're easy to get a hold of. And yeah, I hope to share any of the lessons I've learned with other direct-to-consumer operators. I mean, I think, again, we're all trying to solve the same problem, and we're all trying to, you know, make our customers' lives better. So I think there's a lot to be said for sharing all that we've learned with each other, and I'm happy to be a part of that.
Love it. Really appreciate it. Thanks again.
Yeah, thank you, Samir.
Thank you so much for listening to Scaling with Samir. Please subscribe and leave us a review. Your thumbs up, ratings, and reviews go a long way to help promote the show and mean a lot to me and my team. We also have snippets of these episodes on YouTube. Scaling with Samir is sponsored by Fetch and Funnel. We've partnered with hundreds of businesses and generated over $500 million for clients using our trademarked Fetch and Funnel method. If you're trying to scale your business, get in touch with us today at fetchfunnel.com. You can also get content that you can learn and apply directly into your business to improve results and scale on our email newsletter. If you are a successful business that is crushing it and would like to be on this program, please visit fetchfunnel.com/podcastguest. Thanks for listening, and we'll see you next time.